We'd like to welcome everyone to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We are just one of a number of other lodges situated throughout the world, and you can find where they're located on the back of our little periodical that you can pick up behind the usher. And the purpose for the United Lodge lodges all over the world, and we look at all the teachings of Madame Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. They were the first ones to put down in writing these ancient ideas, and they did so in the mid-1800s. And we are very lucky now that we have these ideas put down in writing so that we can study independently, we can come together as a group and study these ideas. But the whole purpose is to elevate and perpetuate and spread broadcast the ideas of universal brotherhood. And we also consider anyone to be a theosophist who also... It doesn't matter what religion you are, what race you are. If you put forth in your daily life these ideas of universal brotherhood, then you would be considered to be a theosophist, because that is the foundation for this philosophy. And whenever you come into a meeting, no matter where, you will hear the same ideas putting forth universal brotherhood. And our lodge, in order to fulfill these ideas, we have two meetings a week. And today, as now on Sunday, the doors open at 10:30. The meeting starts at 11 and runs until 12. And starting next month, we will be going back to our regular schedule, and we'll be having panel discussions, and we'll be having forums, which are short talks. All our meetings after the presentation is done, we always have ample time for questions and discussions. On Wednesdays, we will be finishing up a series of discussions on the Bhagavad Gita. And starting in October, we will be going back to our weekly study on the ocean of theosophy. Next week for our Sunday class, the topic will be healing and magnetism. And as was said, we're studying the notes on the Bhagavad Gita by William Q. Judge, and we're still going to be doing that this coming Wednesday. The library, which is in the front of the building, is a lending library only. On Wednesdays, it is open from 5:30 until 7:30. There is always a student available for you if you want to just prepare for that night's class. If you have a personal study that you want to pursue, there is a student volunteer. And we want to let everybody know that the Theosophical Independence, which is a newsletter put out by the students of this lodge, is on the table by the usher. And the book table has all straight-line theosophical material, and we only charge for printing and shipping. We make no profit on this at all. The United Lodge of Theosophists is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings in time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. Basically, whoever you see up here is a volunteer, and we do it in order to help spread broadcast these ideas. So today's class is, we're continuing in our Sunday study of Isis Unveiled, which is Madame Blavatsky's first really big tome, and one can obtain it. It's at the book table. And the topic for today, we're going to be looking at the two ideas of reason and intuition. And it's a very interesting study. There's ideas on both of them that we had never really thought about. And it was a very fun study because it's very interesting learning how one's own nature came about and how we perform and how we can improve. Theosophy, they say it's religious science and a scientific religion. It's also, there's some psychology thrown in there as well. And it's just very interesting because you learn more about yourself and you learn about how other people act and why they act the way they do. And it makes people more understanding if we can learn more about how we act and know, because of this idea of universal brotherhood, that we're all part of that one. So how the meeting will be run today, we'll have three different readings, and they're from the handout that you picked up as you were coming in. To start off, we do want to give a couple definitions just so that we can keep in mind what it is we're talking about today. Definition for reason: a faculty of the mind by which it distinguishes truth from falsehood and which enables the possessor to deduce inferences from facts or from propositions. And intuition is the act by which the mind perceives the agreement or disagreement of two ideas or the truth of things immediately and without reasoning or deduction. So we'll start out with the first reading then.
A high development of the intellectual faculties does not imply spiritual and true life. Many of our greatest scientists are but animate corpses. They have no spiritual sight because their spirits have left them. So we might go through all ages, examine all occupations, weigh all human attainments, and investigate all forms of society. And we would find these spiritually dead everywhere. Reason, the outgrowth of the physical brain, develops at the expense of instinct, the flickering reminiscence of a once divine omniscience, spirit. Reason, the badge of the sovereignty of physical man over all other physical organisms, is often put to shame by the instinct of an animal. As his brain is more perfect than that of any other creature, its emanations must naturally produce the highest results of mental action. But reason avails only for the consideration of material things. It is incapable of helping its possessor to a knowledge of spirit. In losing instinct, man loses his intuitional powers, which are the crown and ultimate of instinct. Reason is the clumsy weapon of the scientist, intuition the unerring guide of the seer. Instinct teaches plant and animal their seasons for the procreation of their species and guides the dumb brute to find his appropriate remedy in the hour of sickness. Reason, the pride of man, fails to check the propensities of his matter and brooks no restraint upon the unlimited gratification of his senses. Far from leading him to be his own physician, its subtle sophistries lead him too often to his own destruction. Nothing is more demonstrable than the proposition that the perfection of matter is reached at the expense of instinct. The zoophyte attached to the submarine rock, opening its mouth to attract the food that floats by, shows, proportionately with its physical structure, more instinct than the whale. The ant, with its wonderful architectural, social, and political abilities, is inexpressibly higher in the scale than the subtle royal tiger watching its prey. With awe and wonder, exclaims Dubois-Raymond, must the student of nature regard that microscopic molecule of nervous substance which is the seat of the laborious, constructive, orderly, loyal, dauntless soul of the ant.
What we were thinking of doing is read a section, then talk about it for a few minutes, because there's a lot in each one of these sections, and we don't want people to forget their questions. But we have a question. Did you want? Yeah.
Okay. Second paragraph.
The first line.
Were you going to read it?
Reason, the outgrowth of the physical brain, develops at the expense of instinct. Now, this is that flickering reminiscence of a once divine omniscient spirit. Can we have some discussion on that?
Yes, that is, we think that that kind of is the nuts and bolts of this part. Reason, the outgrowth of the physical brain, develops at the expense of instinct, the flickering reminiscence of a once divine omniscience spirit. That kind of goes along, let's see, in that same paragraph, it says, in losing instinct, man loses his intuitional powers. And we think what this is saying is that the intuition is actually a development of instinct. Because an instinct in the lower kingdoms, they automatically act. There's not a wonder, well, should I run after that antelope and curve around to the left and attack it there? They just know. It's a knowing. And we even, ourselves, we still do have some instinct left. But the physical brain, as was part of the question, is that our physical brains have developed more than the lower kingdoms. If they have brains, or like when it talked about the zoophytes, there's no spine, there's no brain, but there's an intelligence there, and it knows instinctively that it has to stick to that rock and wave whatever part it has to attract food. That's instinctive. But as the physical body becomes more complex and the brain becomes more complex, we say in Theosophy that one way that we can react more to our higher nature is by our brain becoming more porous. But if we're not looking towards the higher, if our higher nature is being stunted, then that ability to absorb the higher promptings is ruined, so to speak. So when it says reason, the outgrowth of the physical brain develops at the expense of instinct, the more we are focused, the more we are distracted from our spiritual nature, our intuition will be sacrificed as well. In the back?
We think it's important to remember that sentence that was read, the flickering reminiscence of a once divine omniscience, is talking about ourselves as spiritual thinkers incarnating. The minute we incarnate with all of our power to perceive, we are using an instrument that is the physical brain. So it says reason develops. Well, that's maybe a little bit difficult to understand in English. We're the ones who are developing that reason by the way we use the brain. It doesn't develop of itself. And in that development, that love of the material and sensual, we lose the memory and connection of our own omniscience. So what we're talking about is a dual mind that can go in either direction. We choose reason, and because we always choose it, we lose the memory of intuition. And it is a spiritual power. Mm-hmm. It is instinct in the animals, but in us, it is far beyond that.
And we've spoken recently, we think, in class about intuition. And as we said, it's a knowing that something is right or that something is wrong. And you can't really say, well, I think it's wrong because with intuition, it just is. You just know. And you had your hand up.
Well, with intuition, it just is, and you just know, sure. But at the same time, that level of conviction has to be open to proof. And if someone just intuits this, that, and the other thing, and really has no idea why there's a lot of folly in there. You know, you should be able to logically back up your intuition, but. The idea that we lose instinct as reason develops, there's a lot to be said for that, because the more we lose instinct, the more we gain will, and the more, you know, freedom to choose. And the more we gain freedom to choose, the more we learn about ourselves. So if we were to lose our freedom to choose through reason, we'd still be on the level of an animal plane in these physical bodies. Of course, without these physical bodies, we are spiritual beings.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that we're not. But if we're operating entirely on instinct, then really we're operating entirely on universal forces directing us, which in the end we'll be back to, but we have to prove to ourselves that we're going to learn these laws and follow them by freedom to choose to do so for the sake of doing so. And we need reason to prove that to ourselves.
The whole process that was just mentioned is a process by which, as we progress, as we become more spiritual in our thinking, it's a process that we all will be going through, and we are all at different levels of experience, of knowledge, and of learning. So in order, it's a very complicated functionality with the human being, because there is that idea of free will. We're looking at behind will stands desire, and it's that whole idea of desire that, as was said, our minds are dual in nature. We can function from the higher or we can function from the lower. So if we're looking at the idea of desire, then we're hoping that our desire will be functioning at a more spiritual level. So it's a fancy kind of juggling act when we're looking at, we want to keep our instinct intact to some degree, because that will be how we access our intuition. And we do want to go back. This is part of the of my answer that our discussion. On the first paragraph, talking about greatest scientists are but animate corpses. The next thing they say is they have no spiritual sight because their spirits have left them. And the last part of that paragraph says, we would find these spiritually dead everywhere. And we thought this was a very powerful way to start out the whole study for today, because those folks whose spirits have left them, it's not like their spirit is gone. There's a disconnect because they are so materialistic that the spirit cannot access our minds, at least the higher mind, at all. So when we're looking at this idea of being spiritually dead, this person is totally in the reasoning realm. And that's not to say that in the far, far future, this person may come around. But when that connection between the spirit and the mind is broken, that's what we're looking at as being the spiritually dead everywhere. And there's a focus on materialism and reason without the benefit of some kind of compassion for the rest of the world. In the back?
We're thinking from some previous comments, we were talking about losing that link to intuition or trying to rebuild it, make it porous to us. We think there are examples of ways the intuition can be sparked all around us, all the time. The bigger ones are noticeable. The fire in, I think it was Seaside, New Jersey, after they had just rebuilt from the Sandy storm. Every single one they interviewed on the news said, it's okay, we're going to rebuild and start again. There was a coming together of not mourning the loss of what they were watching and the destruction, but rather, we did it before, we're ready to do it again, and that willingness to altruistically work together is an outpouring of intuition. This needs to be done. I need to help here. So maybe if we look for those examples or those opportunities during our day, we might see them.
And it's interesting, too, about how to build your intuition. And it's, one needs to, we talk about check, test, and verify everything, that we are not to take anything on face value. So with the intuition and how do we build it, then how do we, as was said, we need to be aware of what is going on around us, and trying to listen, try and hear what is going on in your mind. And it is hard, and if one goes with the intuition, some people might say, well, how do we know that's just not a strong desire that we want to happen? Well, if you give in to that thought or those feelings and it goes wrong, well, then you say, okay, then that was more desire than it was intuition, and you keep trying. And to hold on to the spiritual nature and to study these ideas and to meditate, so we need to make our minds more porous to the promptings of the intuition. Yes.
The idea that intuition we have blocked it. And do you not think that our first task is to realize and understand who we are?
Mm-hmm.
And once we come to that realization, that has to be the beginning of intuition. If we know that we are not these bodies, we are not these feelings, we are not these circumstances, but we are that which is unchanging. And when you realize that, or you come to a better understanding of that, something awakens in us that we haven't really tapped into before. And we would think that would be intuition.
Yes, the comment having to do with one of the ways that we can determine our intuitive nature is to be aware of ourselves and everybody else, and even the lower kingdoms, that these forms that we're in now are only temporary. It's our spiritual nature that incarnates from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime, bringing with it the knowledge as well as the lessons that we have to learn and glean from that particular life. So when we get a strong sense of ourselves and others as spiritual beings, and to acknowledge that and look for those spiritual, they talk about the sacred and the mundane, and learning those and knowing that others are going through the same process at different levels, of course, as we are, that can be the first step towards intuition. Yes, in the back.
One way we can use our reason in this very process is just take a little notebook and for 1 week be a scientist of what passes through your own mind. Had an intuition that so-and-so, maybe a friend, a loved one, was unhappy or in trouble or ill. And take down notes on everything that passes through your head. And then, the next day, if you can, see how many of those things were verifiable. You begin to then trust the sense in yourself. Then turn it inward and do what was spoken of. Find what's changeless about you. And make a study of that. Mm-hmm. And then you understand where intuition is coming from.
We need to move on to the next. We could have spent the whole class on this. The second reader, please.
Like everything else which has its origin in psychological mysteries, instinct has been too long neglected in the domain of science. We see what indicated the way to man to find relief for all his physical ailing, says Hippocrates. It is the instinct of the earlier races when cold reason had not as yet obscured man's inner vision. Its indication must never be disdained, for it is to instinct alone that we owe our first remedies. Instantaneous and unerring cognition of an omniscient mind, instinct is in everything unlike the finite reason, and in the tentative progress of the latter, the godlike nature of man is often utterly engulfed. Whenever he shuts out from himself the divine light of intuition. The one crawls, the other flies. Reason is the power of the man, intuition the prescience of the woman. Plotinus, the pupil of the great Ammoniacus, the chief founder of the Neoplatonic school, taught that human knowledge had three ascending steps: opinion, science, and illumination. He explained it by saying that the means or instrument of opinion is sense or perception, of science, dialectics or illumination.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Of illumination. intuition or divine instinct. To the last, reason is subordinate. It is absolute knowledge founded on the identification of the mind with the object known. Prayer opens the spiritual sight of man, for prayer is desire, and desire develops will. The magnetic emanations proceeding from the body and every effort, whether mental or physical, produce self-magnetization and ecstasy. We're skipping down to the next paragraph. Every human being is born with the rudiment of the inner sense called intuition, which may be developed into what the Scotch know as second sight. All the great philosophers who, like Plotinus, Porphyry, and Iamblichus, employed this faculty, taught the doctrine. There is a faculty of the human mind, writes Iamblichus, which is superior to all which is born or begotten. Through it, we are enabled to attain union with the superior intelligences, to being transported beyond the senses of this world, scenes of this world, and to partaking the higher life and peculiar powers of the heavenly ones.
Thank you. One of the examples, when we're talking about the lower kingdoms and how their instinct is expressed, one of the things that we find absolutely fascinating is in regards to plants. Now, if you ever watch, you plant something that's a vine, like a morning glory, they don't have any eyes. Yet, if you watch, you know, like go out a couple times during the day and look at the vine part, it knows where to go to find something to wrap around. Like, how does it know to do that? It doesn't have a brain, doesn't have any eyes, yet there's an instinct in this plant that knows, somehow it senses, to go to this post or whatever to twine itself up. And we just thought that that was just an incredible piece of intuition we just wanted to share. Yes, in the back.
So, like the humans who have that spiritual oneness, the reflection of that within them, and if we could only wrap our minds around that, trusting that, we would be touching intuition.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we know with mothers that there's an intuition, there's a knowing. If your college-age child is 1,000 miles away and there's something wrong, and you just know that. The feeling is so overwhelming that you know that there's an issue, and you call, and it may be confirmed, maybe not. But we thought, if we could go back to the reading, prayer opens the spiritual sight of man, for prayer is desire, and desire develops will. The magnetic emanations proceeding from the body at every effort, whether mental or physical, produces self-magnetization and ecstasy. So we would like to put out then to the class about what does this sentence, when we're looking at prayer opens the spiritual sight of man, is that something that maybe could be used to help develop our intuition?
Well, if when we talk about the spiritual side of man, and then really we're talking, we think about the spiritual soul and maybe the powers of the spiritual soul. So it would seem, if we were going to develop intuition, soon as we stick me into the equation,
mm-hmm.
it's we don't want to say it's no longer the spiritual soul, but you're putting your own stuff into it, and the more stuff we put into it personally, the more you know, the less pure it is,
mm-hmm.
and the less pure it is, then it's not going to be the power of the spiritual soul. It's going to be the power of personal stuff. We think. So, live a life of virtue.
Okay, the idea of living a life with of virtue, and those of us that have been studying the Bhagavad Gita, we know that a big part of that in trying to determine ourselves as spiritual beings is that of doing our duty as it comes to us without any, as the commenter said, getting ourselves out of the way, doing what has to be done with no expectation of what the results are going to be. And so we think that that could go along with it as well. Yes.
Well, to develop our will, I think it's told us in the philosophy that we must have a strong desire, because behind will stands desire. So the desire is the motivating force. But what is it that we need to desire? You know, that is always the question.
Mm-hmm.
And when we come to the philosophy, we understand that there's a personal side of our nature, but there's also an impersonal side. And the fact that when we tune into that impersonal side, we see a universal brotherhood, because
mm-hmm.
everything, we are all the same, and we only differ in degree. You know, we have certain features that are different, but basically we're all alike. So the uniting of the family of man, or a strong desire to form a nucleus of universal brotherhood, would have to be at the basis of our examination of ourselves and of nature and of everything. And if it's on the personal side, it never ends
mm-hmm.
with us realizing anything. We just keep on wanting more and more and more and never being satisfied. The only way we can be satisfied is if we tap into that unchanging aspect of ourselves. And that desire will ultimately develop our intuition, but not to develop intuition, but
let it go.
Desire to serve, to help, to do what we can to alleviate the suffering of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why we're all here in this room, is because our physical acts often only quiet some of the suffering, but the knowledge of who and what we
mm-hmm.
are will end that suffering. So, I mean, there has to be that strong desire to help.
We think the last two comments really kind of tie together a lot of what this class is about when we're looking at reason and intuition. And we have to understand, too, that everything is dual, and that reason has its higher aspect as well. But one of the things that we've read so far is that we are all born as our intuition. We have it. We're born with it. As newborns, we see how instinct is the main idea at this point, because you know, when a baby gets startled, it throws its, you know, its arms and legs out as a protection. And there's a lot of newborn instincts that as the child gets older, they go away. But we are all born with this idea of intuition, and it's, as we've been talking, it's the idea that we have to get out of our way in order for that intuition to work its way through, because it is there. it is there. And by realizing that we are spiritual beings and that the person sitting next to us is spiritual as well, and also the lower kingdoms. The lower kingdoms are conscious. They're not self-conscious, but they have their own type of consciousness, which is based in instinct. And as we see in the lower kingdoms, when we come to the animal kingdom, that there's a whole array of the instinct, how strong that instinct is as the animal becomes more complicated with its brain. So we have to realize that universal brotherhood connects us all together, and that in order for us to develop our intuition, to move from strictly reason to a more spiritual, intuitive nature, we have to realize that we are all connected, and that we all have our own different level of intuition. In the back there.
There are examples, especially during the World War II. We know intimately about the Air Force, particularly down in Fort Benning in Georgia. And it's our understanding, we're told, that before they could even get the commission, they were given a package of matches, a pocket knife, I think some water tablets to sterilize water, and they were let loose in those terrible swamps down there in Georgia. And many did make it through. Some they had to go get them. But from what I understand, it's a terrifying experience for a city boy with just a knife and some matches and some water sterilizer. And putting them in the cottonmouth snakes and alligators and quicksand.
Mm-hmm.
And this individual, this made him graduate from a more or less teenage mind into an adult. Never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
So he had to rely on his intuition, because the technical training they had was no good in that swamp.
No. So we do, in every situation, we need to assess where we are and see if we're looking at, you know, instinct and intuition or reason. And you had your hand.
When it says that prayer opens the spiritual sight of man, for prayer is desire and desire develops will, what are we praying for? I mean, exactly, are we praying for something for ourselves? Are we praying, as it says later on in the sentence, in order to produce self-magnetization and ecstasy? Should ecstasy be, is that something that we would pray for? Or is that something that comes about after we properly pray? What is the proper way of praying?
The theosophical idea of prayer is rather different than the standard idea of prayer, because our prayer is called will prayer, and we're looking, as it says, prayer opens the spiritual sight of man and develops, and desire develops will. And we are not praying to an outside deity. What we are praying to is actually, we're trying to sense and be impressed by our higher nature. And we can, it's like the meditative state, that we're opening, we're not making our minds go blank. We are not beseeching an outside essence. We are trying to open up our mind and to look particularly at some kind of a spiritual idea. We think about we can look at the idea, we're just, our minds just went blank. When we sit in meditation, we're looking at a spiritual idea. We're not having our minds go blank. We're not praying to an outside God. We are asking our minds, in a way, to be influenced by our higher nature, which is connected to the deific essence. So when we're looking at this idea of self-magnetization and ecstasy, we are looking at a fulfillment of our nature by this idea of prayer and meditation. And it says, produce self-magnetization and ecstasy, that as we do this more often, it will become easier to access our higher nature, and that this idea of self-magnetization and ecstasy will actually be a natural development of it, of this prayer. Yes?
Well, if we want to redevelop intuitional powers, it would seem that we would have to rediscover the instincts that we've lost. It seems that the rediscovery of the instincts would come first, and then, because according to what I'm reading and hearing, is that it says, in losing instinct, man loses his spirit. Man loses his intuitional powers. So So we would have to regain the instincts mm-hmm. that we have lost. That would seem to come first.
Well, it's not as if we've lost them. They're still there, and it's trying to access them again, because our materialistic nature, all the distractions of this world these days, has blocked our access to them. So we're looking at trying to refocus onto the spiritual side of our nature. In the back?
We can do some very simple things, like, every time I put me first, I'm blocking what is a natural mm-hmm. instinct, intuition to be universal or compassionate. Every time I think I'm outsmarting someone, I can realize the intuition of that is I outsmarted myself. We have 1,001 ways every day to reconnect with what we already know. But remember, our whole physical life is instinctive. We don't tell the heart to beat, or the food to be digested, or the various digestions to become mm-hmm. bone or hair or anything else. It all works automatically unless we interfere with it.
Yes.
So we can easily become, as was said, virtuous, but only if we realize that the virtue itself is not the important factor. The important factor is it makes you more receptive to the life around mm-hmm. you.
We'll take one more question on this and we'll go to the last part.
We are probably using our intuition a lot more than we realize. There are so many times when we're faced with decisions, sometimes very important decisions, like, am I going to accept this job offer? Or at work, you have to make a decision on a large project, and you have several options, you don't know where to go. And what happens? You go through the process, you weigh all the facts. You use your reason, and you have all the facts, and then you go inside, you get still, and say, okay, here are the facts. I'm open. What shall I do?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there comes this aha moment, and you know exactly, sometimes it comes in the middle of the night, you know
mm-hmm.
exactly which of those options to pick. And I'm sure it's happened to everyone.
Yes. Yeah, like we said a little bit ago, there's a dual aspect to reason. And sometimes when a situation arises, we need to step back and detach from the emotional aspect that could be involved and kind of think or write down the pros and cons. And then you can, then maybe after seeing all that in black and white, then maybe the answer will come. And it's interesting, the comment also mentioned in the middle of the night, we are also encouraged that we can do this will prayer before we go to bed, because in a deep sleep state, that is actually the daytime of the soul. And sometimes when we wake up, we may not remember a dream specifically related to the problem, but we may have a sense or a feeling of the right way to go. We have almost 10 minutes left, if we can have the last reading.
Were there no inner sight or intuition, the Jews would never have had their Bible, nor the Christians Jesus. What both Moses and Jesus gave to the world was the fruit of their intuition or illumination. What their subsequent elders and teachers allowed the world to understand was dogmatic misrepresentations and often blasphemy. To accept the Bible as a revelation and nail belief to a literal translation is worse than absurdity. It is blasphemy against the divine majesty of the unseen. If we had to judge of the deity and the world of spirits by its human interpreters, now that philology proceeds with giant strides on the fields of comparative religions, belief in God and the soul's immortality could not withstand the attacks of reason for one century more. That which supports the faith of man in God and a spiritual life to come is intuition, that divine outcome of our inner self, which defies the mummeries of the Roman Catholic priest and his ridiculous idols, the 1001 ceremonies of the Brahmin and his idols, and the Jeremiads of the Protestant preacher and his desolate and arid creed with no idols, but a boundless hell and a damnation hooked on at the end. Were it not for this intuition, undying, though often wavering because so clogged with matter, human life would be a parody and humanity a fraud. This ineradicable feeling of the presence of someone outside and inside ourselves is one that no dogmatic contradictions nor external form of worship can destroy in humanity. Let scientists and clergy do what they may. Moved by such thoughts of the boundlessness and impersonality of the deity, Gautama Buddha, the Hindu Christ, exclaimed, "As the four rivers which fall in the Ganges lose their names as soon as they mingle their waters with the holy river, so all who believe in Buddha cease to be Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vyasas, and Shudras."
The last part of this paragraph, we think, indicates the importance of the idea we've been talking about all along about universal brotherhood. That once we become aware of our spiritual nature, then it's imperative as well that we look at everybody else as having a spiritual nature. That we are all, as when we talk about the second fundamental, we talk about the idea of universal brotherhood, that we are all part of that one deific essence, and that this idea of intuition can bind us all together once we become aware of that spirituality nature of us all. So we have a few more minutes where we can ask questions on this, comments, or any part of it in the back?
Well, the end of it seemed to indicate that the work to be done, as we've been studying, is first the recognition of the different parts of our nature, but finally to ultimately blend one into the other, uplift, and at that point we imagine we will live in full intuition. But as was said before, that purification process has to take place first. But the ultimate option is to blend and transform.
Yes, the transforming, we're trying to lift up our lower nature into the higher. And as was stated earlier, we need to always remember that the mind that we are using is one, and we can use it in two different ways. So when we're talking about the higher mind and the lower mind, it's all one mind with two aspects that we can use it, how we can use it. Yes?
Perhaps in the same sense, you know, we talk about developing desire, really desire is one. We may desire a bunch of different things, but the principle of desire is one principle within us.
Mm-hmm.
So what might help us to develop our desire and capacity to direct will in things is to focus the desire and to release or to construct our value system that so it's consistent with
mm-hmm.
what's needed for the greater good. And one way to do that is when we meditate. You know, by meditating and we focus, we reconstruct our value system so that things that we've desired in the past, we more clearly see how worthless it is.
Mm.
And things that have always been around but haven't been focused on may actually be climbing up higher on our value, in our value system, so that we're desiring less and less and less things, and the important things are still there, and we can put more power into bringing about the right things
mm-hmm.
in accordance with our spiritual soul, which hopefully we're trying to tap into while we meditate.
It's interesting when we think about doing that, we can see, and we don't want to push the idea of comparing ourselves and seeing how far we've come, because that ultimately we can develop spiritual pride if we take it too far. But just it's interesting to look back and see what used to attract us and what we used to be interested in and what we like to do, how it's changed over the years. Yes?
Yeah, one other thing that seems to be important is while we're working hard to change, and we know how slowly that's going, we can begin to have more sympathy for the people mm-hmm. around us. We have no idea what their motives are, what their struggles are, what they might be trying to change about themselves. So all the while we're working on this personal nature,
mm-hmm.
we should respect everyone else's efforts.
Yes, thank you. And looks like our time is up. And have a good day.